Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground.
Hello, and welcome to the Garden Goddess Show on WDRT 91.9 FM from Viroqua, Wisconsin. I'm Donna Smith, your host for this half-hour program on gardening. I'm excited to share this time with you for my second garden show on WDRT. On today's show, I'm going to introduce you to my friend Glenn Davey. Glenn is a vegetable gardener extraordinaire, and he's going to share some of his tips for successful container gardening. Glenn's Instagram page says he's a backyard hockey-themed gardener, so this should be a really fun conversation. I'll share a few of my favorite garden tools today, and I'll tell you about a couple of garden books worth checking out. Let's get started with a couple of questions from the Garden Cart. Remember, you can email me your garden questions at gardening@wdrt.org, and I'll try to answer your questions on a future show. Andrew wrote and sent a picture of an overwintered basil plant covered with white specks and yellowing leaves. He wanted to know what this was on his plant and if it would affect the other herbs that he has overwintered inside. Well, Andrew, you have a bad case of white fly on that plant. White flies are not actually flies, although they do look fly-like. They're in the same order of insects as things like scales, aphids, and mealybugs. These are insects in the order Homoptera, which have piercing, sucking mouth parts, which allows them to suck out plant juices from the leaves of the plants they're on. The damage appears as yellowing and wilted foliage, just like in your picture, on any affected plants. A severe infestation can even kill a plant. Since your basil is edible, you would not want to spray that with any type of insecticide to get rid of these pests. It would be safe to use an insecticidal soap, and be sure to follow the label directions. A heavy spray of water can be used to knock the bugs off your plant. Either methods should get rid of most, if not all, of the bugs. To prevent future infestations, be sure to check plants for pests before bringing them into the house. Sanitation is important, so clean up dead and dying leaves on plants and give them some space for good air circulation. You can set up a yellow sticky trap, which you can buy commercially, or use a yellow index card coated with some petroleum jelly like Vaseline. The bugs are attracted to that yellow color as if they were new plant leaves. They'll get stuck on the card so you can see how many there are. This is an indicator that the pest is there and will provide some level of control. Be sure to monitor your plants regularly to be able to act quickly when you see the pests. Lori sent in a question. When is it best to cut the tops off of the bulb flowers like daffodils, irises, etc.? Lori, you want a deadhead spring bulb such as tulips and daffodils when they've finished flowering. This will direct energy back into the bulbs. Deadheading is taking off the spent flower or the whole stalk that the flower is on when it's done blooming. You don't want to remove the plant's foliage until it dies back naturally. The leaves produce food for the bulb in order to create the flower that will bloom next year. If you have a lot of bulbs in your yard that look unsightly, you can add annuals in front of them to cover the dying foliage or plant perennials nearby that will start to grow and conceal the bulb foliage also. Bearded iris is a late spring bloomer. Trim off the entire flower stalk when these are done blooming. Make your cuts as low to the stalk as possible and at a slight angle. Those angled cuts will encourage the water to run off to the side. Bearded irises are prone to several different diseases, bacterial leaf blight, botrytis, ink spot, soft rot, and leaf spot are among the most common. Regularly remove any iris leaves that are discolored or show signs of disease, such as spots, streaks, or blotches. In late summer, when the plants look ratty, cut back all the foliage about halfway and form kind of a fan shape of the foliage by cutting each leaf at an angle, which again helps the water drain off the leaves. After frost kills back the foliage, remove it completely. Thanks for that question, Lori. One last question today is from Hannah, who asked, is it too early to move or divide perennials? No, it isn't too early, Hannah. The ground has thawed, and it isn't likely to freeze again, and it's very diggable at this point. So if your plants are visible so you know where to dig, I'd say go for it. I'd only hold off if the ground is pretty saturated from a recent rain. You don't want to be digging in really wet soil, which can ruin the soil structure. But as long as it isn't too wet, now is a good time to divide and move your perennials and or to put in new ones as well. It's time for our patio talk with my guest, Glenn Davey. We're talking with him today about his raised bed and container vegetable gardening. Welcome, Glenn. It's great to talk with you.
Thank you, Donna, and good morning to everyone, and thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely. Glenn has an Instagram page, Gardens by Glenn, that's with two N's, where he shares all kinds of information about vegetables and flowers that he grows in the Chicago suburbs. How long have you been gardening, Glenn?
I've been gardening for 40 years in some fashion, and I grew up in a gardening family. So the gardening bug has been in my blood ever since.
That's awesome. I've heard you, or I know that you've lived in your present house for over 35 years and did some in-ground gardening when you first moved there and now do pretty much exclusively raised bed and container gardening, correct?
That is correct. I started the above ground raised beds and then the vertical gardens about 20 years ago. I started with in-ground gardens, and I wasn't satisfied with the results.
Okay. So that leads me to a question from our listener, Kathy, who wants to know, what are the advantages of raised beds versus ground-level gardening?
Well, the raised beds, I did a lot of reading before I jumped to this this technique of gardening, but the raised bed, the advantages of it, they're easy to maintain. A loose, well-draining soil is really what you want to strive for plant health. It's easy to pull weeds, and another advantage. And soil temperatures in the spring with raised beds, the soil temperature rises much faster because the sun hits the side of the raised beds and warms up the soil. So that gives you an advantage to start planting your cool weather plants earlier than in an in-ground setting.
Okay. And what's the time frame then during the year that you're harvesting vegetables from your garden?
Well, I started harvesting the last couple of days. Basically, the last frost is May 3rd, but I do put out the cool weather plants, the lettuces, the kales, the Swiss chards, in late March.
Mm-hmm.
So to answer your question, you know, we're Halloween with some frost cloth protection. Without the frost cloth, you're probably several weeks less and protecting from those cold weather nights in the fall and then the early spring.
Okay.
So it's a 5 to 6 month period in my area, and I'm zone 5B, and I know that's a little warmer than Baraqua.
Yeah, I think just a little bit, yeah. And in your garden, Glenn, how much space do you have devoted to your vegetable garden?
I have grown to 10 raised beds, and each bed is roughly 25 square feet. So that's a total of 250 square feet of growing space. And, of course, they have aisles in between. And 10 of the raised beds are within a fenced-in area that existed when I moved into the house. So I built those out of wood, and they're 10 inches tall because there's no fear of really rabbits jumping up and eating your new seedlings.
Mm-hmm.
When I expanded to three raised beds outside that fenced area in the backyard facing west. I purchased some 17-inch raised metal beds that I have flowers and also vegetables. And I've had the raised beds for the metal for two seasons now. And 17 inches seems to be a good height to keep the rabbits out.
Yeah, that's important because they love to munch on everything, don't they?
They do. Overpopulated.
Yeah. We need to take a quick station ID. You're listening to WDRT 91.9 in Viroqua, Wisconsin. And we're talking with my friend Glenn Davey, whose Instagram page says he's a backyard hockey-themed gardener. What does hockey play a role in your garden, Glenn?
Well, I use my staking system for many of my plants to support. For example, the tomatoes, I single stem them and I secure them to hockey sticks that were extended by probably 4 to 5 foot wood stakes. So I get to grow vertically in the gardens to grow more food, and the height of the tomatoes will reach about 7 feet tall.
Wow.
So it's kind of fun with the hockey theme, and I have other hockey items hanging in on arbors and so forth.
How many hockey sticks do you have?
I have in total probably about 35.
Makes 35. For a fun looking garden.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's unique.
Yep, that sounds very unique. And people can see pictures of that on your Instagram page. You told me that you grow 10 different varieties just of basil. Besides the basil, how many different plant varieties do you grow? And do you grow everything from seed or do you buy plants?
Currently, and since I retired early, which in 2018, prior I bought all my plants and I was working full time and traveling a lot. I had no time to start. But since then, the last 7 years, I grow everything from seed, and I've invested in some equipment in an indoor grow room in the basement with some nice LED grow lights. And to answer your question about the varieties, I tallied them up. And the veggies, I grow 65 types of vegetables, including the basils, as you were speaking of earlier. In addition to this year, I started 10 different flowers, varieties.
Nice.
So that's wave one, and that's I'm growing for 4 other people. I help them start their gardens. And that's wave one that I'm already giving away a couple trays to friends to make room for additional plants that will go in a little later in the year.
Oh, very nice. Those people are pretty lucky to be getting seeds, little plants from you that you took the time to grow. That's awesome.
Yeah.
In your beds, I understand that you use a technique called Hugel culture. Can you explain what that is and why it's beneficial as a garden practice?
Sure. Yeah, Hugel culture is it's a method of layering organic materials like wood logs and branches, compost, leaves, instead of using, you know, the traditional soil. And the benefits, you know, the layered structure that creates a microclimate, you know, it's beneficial for plants. And what happens is as the wood and the other materials decompose, they release nutrients into the soil. The added beneficial microorganisms in the soil to the soil improves the soil health and fertility. Probably, but the biggest, it saves a lot of cost. If you were to fill a 17-inch tall bed, it would cost hundreds of dollars in potting soil.
Right.
And lastly, I think the one of the components, it helps retain the moisture, just having that layered materials in that 17-inch bed. So those are, that's basically in a nutshell. And then I top off, and I did the three beds two seasons ago. I think I used three bags of potting soil. That's it.
Wow.
And these beds are 2 foot by about 10 feet long, 10 to 11 feet long. So that's using what I have on hand. And then you'll, as the season grows, you have to top off because it will settle. It'll settle 2-3 inches a year.
Yeah.
You top off in the spring.
Well, that's great, because it sounds like then, like, you're using a lot of things from your yard that are going into those beds, kind of recycling a lot of materials from your garden too, right?
That's exactly right. When I expanded to those new raised beds, I timed it with an arborist that trims my trees, and I have very large trees too. And he was cutting the big limbs to cut them in like 16-inch pieces, and I was there stacking them at the bottom of the raised bed to start the hugel culture method. So there was some timing involved there.
Oh, good planning on your part, absolutely. And then do you reuse that soil in the raised beds every year just by adding more materials to it or something?
I do. There is no reason to throw it out or start over from scratch. You know, what I'll do is fluff it up, and I will, you really need to, the soil gets depleted after a season from the plants growing in it. So I basically add in some worm castings. I use granular fertilizer. I always maintain total organic, so I look for products with the OMRI certification, which is the Organic Materials Review Institute. I was turned on to this azomite rock dust, which is pulverized rock dust, which comes from the quarries. I use that to remineralize the my green stalks and my raised beds, all the raised beds. And I'll touch up a little more perlite and vermiculite, and maybe about 10%, 15% new potting soil to start off the season.
Okay.
So I'm not throwing away any soil. It can be reused and remineralized.
All right. Well, that sounds great. I'm going to wrap up with one final question. Tell me what has been your biggest success in your garden.
Well, the biggest success we're really getting the kick out of. We're growing tomatillos and jalapeno peppers, and making that fresh salsa verde is a big win for us.
Yeah.
In addition, last year I grew the luffah, which is a gourd, but when it dries on the vine, it's a luffa sponge. That's been a big win too.
Well, that sounds really fun. And if I was going to start container gardening as a beginner, what plants would I most likely have success with?
I recommend for beginners and container gardening lettuce, because the germination is very fast. You can get 4 to 5 day germination on it. Some herbs, you know, I like the basils. In addition, two other vegetables that grow fast are beets and radishes.
Okay.
Those grow very well in containers, and radishes actually mature, some of them, in as little as 25 to 30 days.
All right. Well, that's great advice, Glenn. Wow, we could talk all day, which I know. But we're out of time, so we'll have to wrap up and have you back in another time to talk about more of your gardening advice and helping our listeners with learning more about raised beds and container gardening. So I'd like to thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you. It was fun, and don't hesitate to call again, and I'd be happy to talk additional gardening.
That's wonderful. And I'm sure there have been some great tips that our listeners heard that they can incorporate into their gardens this summer. I hope you have a great gardening season, Glenn. We'll talk with you again soon.
Thank you very much, Donna.
Thank you. Well, that was a great conversation with Glenn talking about raised bed gardening. Now on to the bookshelf, and I have two selections this month. First, Glenn shared with me that one of his favorite books is Square Foot Gardening by Mel Bartholomew. Mel developed his techniques back in the early 80s and has been teaching those techniques ever since. The newest version of his book is updated with current techniques and practices that he's incorporated into his methods for raised bed and vertical gardening. There are lots of new pictures in this latest version also. Another book that you may find to be very helpful is called Weedless Gardening. Wouldn't we all love to have a weedless garden? This book by Lee Reich has some great suggestions for limiting soil disturbance when working in the garden as one way to reduce the germination of weed seeds. This book introduces you to the top-down gardening practices that protect the soil, eliminate a lot of weeding and other heavy garden work, as well as reducing water needs in the garden. The tool shed this month has a couple of my favorite tools as well. First is a small steel blade garden shovel that I love. I found one at Ace Hardware called Little Pal. The first one I ever used when I was working back at the Arboretum was a brand called Little Hog. So I refer to all of them as Little Hogs. This utility shovel with a D handle is about 27 inches long. So it's nice and short. And it also comes in a straight long-handled version as well. I like the small blade for working around perennials, and it works really well when planting annuals and vegetable plants too. When I'm out in the garden, I'm never without a pair of garden gloves. And one of my favorites, especially for early season work in the garden, is the Atlas brand nitrile gloves. They're real soft and tight-fitting to your hand. They're not as heavy-duty as a pair of leather gloves, but allow you to really feel things as you're working in the garden. Early in the day, if you go out when it tends to be really dewy and wet when you're weeding, these are a nice alternative to leather gloves. They dry fairly quickly and keep your hands a little less muddy when digging in the garden. The Garden Journal this month has a few tasks for you to keep in mind in the days ahead. If you put down any chemicals in your lawn to get rid of crabgrass, take note that even though the crabgrass preventers are available in stores in very early spring, it may not really be the right time to apply them. Timing is really important. Crabgrass will not start to germinate until the soil temperatures have been around 55 degrees for 5 to 7 consecutive days. Many crabgrass preventers only last in the soil for about 60 days, so they'll apply them as the soil temperatures start to get into the 50s. Redbud is a good indicator tree. Crabgrass germination begins around the time that the redbuds are actually in full flower. So put your preventer down while the redbud flowers are still closed. Timing is a very important part of the control of many insects and diseases in garden plants. Be sure to be applying your controls at the proper time so that you don't waste time and money and whatever it is that you're applying. You can check with the local extension service or garden center for additional information if you need that. Plant annual flowers and summer bulbs after all danger of frost has passed. Keep an eye on the weather rather than relying on some of the traditional garden dates like Mother's Day. While mid-May is often thought of as the average last frost date, Our changing weather often gives us frosts or freezes as late as the end of May, so watch the weather and avoid putting out sensitive plants too early. Stake tall and floppy perennials early as they begin to grow. Grow through support rings and cages, allow the plants to grow up through those supports and hide them for a tidier look in your garden. I recently watched a UW Extension webinar called What's the Deal with No Mow May, which you may find on their website, hort.extension.wisc.edu. No Mow May is a practice of not mowing your lawn at this time of year in order to help early season pollinators find sources of pollen. Bees, moths, beetles, fireflies, butterflies, and other insects all act as pollinators in the landscape. BeeCityUSA.org is a website dedicated to promoting good landscaping practices that benefit pollinators. You can find a wealth of information on their website, more and more about No Mow May. One of the biggest things that you can do is to just plant flowers. Every little bit will help our pollinators. Any habitat that provides flowers will benefit them. A lawn that's strictly grass doesn't really have any impact on pollinators, but not mowing lawns that do have flowers, like dandelions and clover, for instance, can be beneficial. You can also add different types of clovers or even thyme to your grass to make that more beneficial in the spring for the pollinators. So again, the biggest thing that you can do is to plant more flowers in your yard, and flowers that bloom very early to very late to really give them the most benefit throughout the season. My friend Hannah asked me the other day, what was my gardening playlist? Honestly, I don't often listen to music when I'm out in the garden. I like to listen to the birds and the sounds around me, but I'll give you a few suggestions for adding some songs to your playlist, and I'll have a few more to come in the future. Good Day Sunshine by the Beatles is a great tune. I Heard It Through the Grapevine by Marvin Gaye. And another Beatles tune, Octopus's Garden. Thanks so much for joining me today. I have enjoyed spending this time with you and with my guest, Glenn Davey. Thanks again, Glenn. Please join me next month for another discussion about gardening and plants. Have a wonderful day. Let's go out and make our world a little more beautiful, one plant at a time.